You're listening to a Comics XF podcast. X-Men. Get it!
Hey everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Battle of the Atom. This is your weekly X-Men podcast where we rank every story from A to Z.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Zach. And Adam, I gotta ask you something.
Please, fire away.
Well, you ever think about how this podcast, which is, I want to say both how most people perceive us.
Yeah.
And also an odd amount of how we perceive each other just because most of our vocal conversations are recorded. How all of this is a performance.
That is true. There is a performative quality to it, you know. I do hope that, you know, we're being ourselves to a certain extent.
Like, well, here's why I'm thinking it. Because there's authenticity behind it. But also, not 30 seconds ago, I was talking like this, and I was telling you about how I'm just so freaking tired right now, man. I'm the best of X-Men podcasting, Zach. I didn't say that part. Hi.
You keep forgetting to introduce yourself. I think that's the second week in a row you did that.
It's 340 episodes in. There's two of us, and our voices aren't that similar. I think I have enough different intonations when I speak.
No one's that confusing us, I don't think.
I don't know. We are two old white guys.
That's true, but our intonations are totally different, I think. You know, but listen,
I like to think I'm up here, you're down here a little bit more, and then you're a little calmer and more you're a lot more contemplative, where I've just got kind of like this manic energy that's going up and down. And it's like, again, it's a performance. We're playing off of each other in different ways.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned performances and the frequencies of our voice, because this week we're talking about Dazzler.
We are talking about Dazzler. Do you like Dazzler? I like Dazzler.
You know, I have developed such a fondness for some of the wacky hijinks in Dazzler's solo series, but that is not what we're talking about this week. We are talking about unfortunate times when Dazzler has died on panel.
Because here's the thing. Somebody, we're not going to name names, somebody had this great idea where they would introduce a plot element about how Dazzler can't die, ? And it's such a bizarre thing to just throw out there and never address.
Yeah. I mean, it's not and even, she's not even an external, like, we don't even get the idea of that.
What I love about that is no one actually has a story to tell that would resolve that, but there's so many X-Men pilled writers who are like, could I figure out what somebody was trying to do with this? could I close this loop?
Well, we are talking about this thanks to a Patreon request, correct?
Yes, this is a Patreon supporter that goes by the nom de plume. Or maybe this is their Christian name. I don't know. Of Shenanigans.
Ooh. Say Shenanigans one more time. No? Didn't get that reference?
No, I understood it. I was just trying to think about... See, here's the thing. I actually swear like a non-insignificant amount in my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
But on podcasts, I strongly avoid it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So I was trying to figure out, wait, how do I talk about the mozzarella sticks and the stuffs on the walls without doing the swears? And it threw me off for a second. Of course, I've seen Super Troopers. I'm in my 30s.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even suggesting it's, you know, one of my favorite movies or anything like that. I just, that line it's always sticks.
There's a lot of movies that we've just seen more than... People don't understand in a pre-Netflix era how little choice there was and how much monoculture and how much movies were defined by what Comedy Central was playing that after.
Ah, yes. Good point. Good point.
TNT, TBS.
Yes. But we want to thank Shenanigans. Did we tell them people how to support the show?
Patreon.com/Battle of the Atom. Y'all know about that website, right? You go there, hearts, pocketbooks, coffers, coins. You do all those things. $5. $5 US dollars. Adam, we used to say that's just a little bit more than the price of a comic book. As someone who doesn't actually buy comic books all that much, all things considered, I'm a digital guy. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
I can wait. Did you know that comic books are just like $5 for 20 pages now?
I just bought one yesterday. I just bought the third issue of Rise of the Powers of X.
And, it's one of the good ones.
I'm enjoying it very, very much. But
we're doing two good X-Men comics these days. We're back to that. But that one's one of the good ones.
There's like three really solid ones right now between Resurrection, Rise, and, you know, X-Men Forever is basically just Immortals, so that's fine.
It is, but in my opinion, after the Hellfire Gala, part of Immortal kind of fell off for me and got into this weird part. Some of that may have been the art, some of that may have been that you start talking White Hot Room, and my eyes do glaze over a little bit.
Totally fair.
I don't care. It's a whole thing. I generally like Kieran Gillen, but I have a tolerance for Kieran Gillen. Like, I know where my levels are, and it's just a matter of taste.
Hey, he's killing it on Rise. So I've been
for the record, I do enjoy Wolverine, but I can understand if someone's like, this story's going on too long. I'd say probably, but I like it.
The 50 part Sabretooth War.
It's a 10 part story.
It's okay. Just feels. Anyway,
they've got six parts worth of story to tell in 10, and that's fine.
So here's a question. Did Shenanigans come up with the pitch of Dazzler's death, or did,
yes.
did you?
No, the whole pitch was Dazzler's death.
Okay. All right. So we are going to start
that with... whole subplot. Yes.
Yeah, we are going to start with the first example of Dazzler dying.
First example in Uncanny X-Men that we remember, because... I don't know about Adam, my good friend. Hello. I've not read all of the Dazzler solo series. She may have been resurrected from the dead. I think her sister had like death powers. So
that is a good point. She might have died in Dazzler. But anyway, this was the request. So we're going to start with this. This is Uncanny X-Men 217 and 218. Obviously written by Mr. Chris Claremont. On 217, we have Jackson Geis and Steve Lealoa on inks. On 218, we have Silvestri showing up with, is it Dan Green doing inks?
I think it's Dan Green.
Yeah. This is kind of, you know, we're post-Mutant Massacre, and this is kind of the start of what will become the Aussie era.
They're building into it, but Claremont doesn't, like, it's that weird in-between era. It's like, there's a point, like, I do believe that after, like, Mutant Massacre got Claremont thinking about, like, oh, wait, this gives me a chance to shake up the book and set a new direction.
Yeah.
I think Fall of the Mutants allows him to, like, actually execute on that new direction and go do what he wants to do, good, bad, or indifferent. But, like, I do think the era in between all of that stuff, like, around 190 to just a bit before Fall of the Mutants, is a bit aimless. And this is a story that definitely feels of a sort of that aimlessness in that 1987 era.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely feel that Chris wants to not just deal with the same characters. He is explicitly trying to set up a new team here. And in 217, we have kind of the new status quo of who is considered the X-Men. So we have Psylocke, we have Rogue, we have Dazzler. Who else do we have here? Longshot. And they will eventually be joined by Havoc. And Banshee is kind of their mentor because they are currently on Muir Island.
Storm's off doing a vision quest.
Yep.
So she won't be joining them. I believe Wolverine was not starting his solo series right now. Him and Storm just did the Murder Grandpa's story. That's right.
Yeah, they're in the two issues before this. So I think they're still in New York. But
yeah, they're all going to come together soon. And then Storm goes on. Wait, no. When the frick is Life Death?
No, Life Death.
Life Death 2. Life Death 2, excuse me. Okay. No, that's before Mutant Mass. That's 198. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway.
It doesn't matter.
Fun fact about Storm and Life Deaths. we were watching X-Men 97 as a family, which means I'm watching it and hoping my kids like X-Men.
Yeah. How's that going?
Mixed.
Okay. Okay. I can see opinions of, I can see kids really liking maybe the first two episodes and being a little bit confused about episode three, where they try and combine Inferno with X-Factor Endgame and like three other things into one episode. I was like, this is a lot.
We have not watched three yet.
Okay. Get excited.
I was generally aware when a second Jean Grey showed up. I was like, okay, what are we doing with this one? Am I terrified? Because I think in general, the show is a mixed bag, even though a lot of people really like it. Yes.
Hey, I am enjoying it. I had very low expectations. So going into it,
my expectations were, it has beaten my expectations, but my expectations again were pretty far to the ground.
Yes. Yes. But I am enjoying it. Wait, why did we get on that? Oh,
because Storm got life death.
Oh, yes. And I think that's going to be episode four.
Is it? That sounds great. Yeah. Or really bad, honestly.
Who knows?
That could be a crapshoot. I don't know.
Let's find out.
Anyway, my kids were like, Storm lost her powers?
Uh-oh.
Because the show legitimately wasn't very clear about that for a child.
Well, there's a couple of things where it's just like, what exactly is happening here? Is a kid going to understand this? But, you know, whatever.
Regardless. Again, it's an animated cartoon for babies.
Yes. Yeah. I've been enjoying it. I fire up Shogun and then, you know, like X-Men 97 is kind of my cool down after that. You know, it's nice.
In between those two, I have three body problem. Is it a good show? No. Am I mad about significant changes from the book series? Yes. Am I still watching it? I mean, like, I got two episodes left, so.
Might as well finish off those two episodes.
I'm going to do it. I'm mad about so much of it as I watch it.
Yeah, because you read the book, right?
They have, so far, they have taken away what might be the best line in the book from the entire series. And I'm so mad about it.
Wow.
I'm so mad because what Dashi says is so good. Also, they don't call him Dashi in the book or not in the show. They call him Clarence. His name is Dashi. It means Big She. The joke is like, oh yeah, that's Big She over there because she's his name.
Mm-hmm.
And now they call him Clarence.
Wow.
Get over yourself, Game of Thrones people. Let us have some fun Chinese people in this show. I don't know.
Oh, poor Zach. I did start watching that today, too, and I was just like, I don't know about this. Anyway,
Dazzler, we'll talk about three-body problem later.
Yeah, Dazzler is having some real issues with whether she actually wants to be an X-Man. One of the fair things enough, that I,
because she kind of doesn't.
Yeah, she is just a person, you know? We know that from her solo series, and she just gets sucked out into these amazing adventures, but... she's a very on the ground person. And one of the things I really enjoy about 217 is that there's a lot of banter and a friendship that's developing between Dazzler and Rogue, who used to be like sworn enemies. And like Rogue was trying to kill her all the time.
Claremont read those bad comics.
Yes. Yeah. And it really works with the dynamics here. And you're starting to see the actions between these characters and how they relate to each other, and it's working. I like the chemistry. But Dazzler really,
the dialogue is fun in this. Like, yeah. This is Claremont's like clicking on dialogue in a way that I don't think he does again until like it's closer to an Excalibur dialogue style for Claremont than his overly purple prose and kind of melodrama that he gets with X-Men. Like, he's having a good time on this one.
Absolutely. I think he's feeling refreshed and is really enjoying it. Dazzler, though, because she is feeling just very unsure, she needs a night out on the town. She ends up at a bar and, you know, just really cuts loose. She's singing, she's dancing. She's just having a good time. And on the way out, who almost runs her over? But... straight from our Madam Web episode last week, one Kane Marco, the Juggernaut, and Dazzler's like, oh, nuts. He must be up to no good. I better stop him. And that does not go well.
This is the second time in like 20 issues that the X-Men have just ruined Juggernaut's day for no reason. He's just driving around and she jumped in the road in his way. And she's like, ah, what's going on? He's like, ah. And then he's like, wait, you're Dazzler. I love Dazzler. Oh, I love, you're great. I'm a huge fan, Dazzler. I hate what happened to you. Oh man, this is fun.
She's not having that. She's like, I don't care that you're a fanboy. I'm going to blind you and I'm going to flatten all of your tires. And Juggernaut's like, look, I'm a big fan, but nobody disrespects me like this.
It's like, yo, hold on. Like, love your stuff. I am still like a guy who is a little misogynistic in these times. And also, you're being very rude.
Right. So she zaps him with everything she's got, and it does appear in the last panel of this issue that at least Juggernaut is under the impression that he has killed Dazzler. Dazzler is dead to the point where he buries her.
On the podcast Cerebro, run by friend of the show, Connor Goldsmith, I believe he described this scene as any gay man in the 80s accidentally killing Kylie Minogue.
Sure. Well, Juggernaut is very, very shocked by his actions. He is not
very upset about this. Yes. Is the Juggernaut.
Yes.
Again, I just want to be clear. Compared to Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut, like, this is the Kane Marco that I like, and the Kane Marco that I'm okay with. Like, actually, wait, you're just a dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not trying to destroy the World Trade Center. You're not trying to capture this old lady for nefarious purposes because your boyfriend told you to. You're just a guy, and you have a Crimson Gem of Sidorak, and you're not going to not get money from banks. But, like, Juggernaut's a jobber, and I've got a lot of respect for jobbers in the Marvel Universe.
He's a lot of fun. He has a lot of personality here. And speaking of personality, I think that one of the things that's really fun is, and this is no insult to Jackson Geiss, but to go from 217 to 218 and see Silvestri and just the pages come alive. You know, he's got such a great sense of style and action. And the beginning of 218 is Havoc and Polaris being run off the road and their Jeep flipping
over. Sets up the Malice thing and the Brood thing in Australia later.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what's going on there. And then we flip back and we realize that Dazzler has been buried alive and needs to rely on the tiniest little sounds that are coming from outside on the surface so that she can actually break out of her trap here. And she gets reunited with the X-Men who have been searching for her. And they decide that they are going to go after Juggernaut, who is wreaking havoc in a nearby town.
I mean, now he is.
Yes.
Listen, is Black Tom Cassidy also using Juggernaut to distract the police while he does crimes? Absolutely.
That is exactly what is happening. But the look, X-Men do have
hurts
some fun
no
here.
One, helps everyone.
But it is a great opportunity for some of these characters to either interact with Juggernaut for a second time or to meet up with him for the first time, like Longshot. Rogue has a chance to, you know, give Kane Marco a smooch and give him some of his own medicine. There's just some fun stuff here, and it all culminates with Rogue stopping a moving train from basically killing everybody in this dirt pit, which is like just a lot of fun. It's a great action movie bit.
I like 80s fun Rogue. I like Dazzler having to figure out what in the world's going on with this fan guy. I like Longshot and Psylocke. Like, this is a fun little dynamic. Like, this is...
I love it.
It's not an all-star. It's not, like, a top shooter on the list. But this is a fun comic. Also, the second issue is called Charge of the Light Brigade because it's a Dazzler thing. Yeah. And I love Chris Claremont sometimes. That man... He can be a fun one.
Absolutely. He is having a blast. I am having a blast reading this, and I just enjoy this team. I think that for everybody who talks about the Aussie era, this is kind of the beginning of what that team is and how it's combining together and the chemistry of it that people remember so fondly. So you mentioned our big old list. We should probably get into ranking this. What is our big old list, Zach?
The big old list is this thing that we're on, and it's on the road to 900. The thing is that we're ranking every X-Men story from best to worst of all time. With, like, we've ranked 891 stories, which is too many X-Men comics, which explains why we're like this.
Yeah.
Adam had read a lot of these beforehand. I had also read a lot of these beforehand, and now we've had to read a lot of these 891 comics more than once in our life.
It's true. It's true.
So put that in perspective. The best X-Men story of all time is the House of X Powers of 10, still undefeated. Ain't nothing going to come for that top spot. Number 100 being Wolverine the Jungle Adventure. Number 300 being New Mutants Annual. Number 2, Wild Ways. Number 500 being the Saga of Crystar, Crystal Warrior. Number 6. Nice. Number 700 being Marvel Team Up, Volume 1, 135. And the worst X-Men story of all time is 2099 World of Tomorrow. It's at 891. At 800, by the way, is the Goblin Force story from Mutant X, a thing that got referenced in a comic.
Yeah.
Like
Resurrection of Magneto.
So stupid. I loved it. Like,
good times.
That's why that's good, is that the Goblin Force was there. And the Goblin Force was only there for real heads who look at that comic and be like, Al, did you put the Goblin Force in there in the background? Did you do the Goblin Force, Al?
All right. So we have a couple of different stories that are near this. Let's see.
I mean, this is better than 300.
Oh, yeah. I think we're probably in the 200s. How do you feel about it compared to a 219, Uncanny 139 to 140 Wendigo?
Very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Juggernaut is a more compelling character than the Wendigo. However, I don't think the friendship of the X-Men, of this team of X-Men, is on the same level as the friendship of Wolverine and Nightcrawler, which puts those stories in, like, in direct competition with one another. I would go a little bit lower than that, though. Like, at 227 is the Omega Red arc of X-Men. That first one. I think this is probably worse than the Omega Red stuff.
I would put it above that.
You'd put it above Omega Red? Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it's firing on more cylinders, you know? It's got more character development, and whereas the Omega Red thing is a lot of posing,
it is, you know, but Adam,
it's
the
great posing,
is so good.
It's great posing. It's
some of the best posing that's ever been in comics.
Sure.
Blofeld couldn't even come close to the level of posing that Jim Lee's Tentacle Man can do. You mentioned style. This does not have as much style as Generation X Underground Special at 225, though.
No, it doesn't. But I do think it's better than John Hickman's Astonishing Tales Mojo World. So would this be a good new 226?
It'll be a good new 226, because I don't want to reread potentially problematic Jonathan Hickman comics.
Okay. So that was Dazzler versus Juggernaut, Uncanny 217 to 218. And now we are going to move into two stories from another Chris Claremont book. What is this one, Zach?
It's New Excalibur. We got to talk about New Excalibur on this podcast, finally.
Yeah, New Excalibur.
We've gone 6 years. Oh. We've gone 6 years, Adam. Are you a New Excalibur head?
Listen, the first time that I read this was because I was trying to track the full arc of Shadow King across his entire publishing history. And so there is a whole thing about evil X-Men and an evil Professor X who then turn out to be controlled by the Shadow King.
See, I just thought you were an Excalibro.
I am not an Excalibro, though I was a huge fan of my one and only Anna Pappard's Gosh Golly Wow podcast. But
which, if for some reason there were multiple Excalibur podcasts ever in the history of time, that one that you're just describing with Dr. Anna Pappard, who I would describe as a friend, probably the best one, best to ever do it.
I would agree. And they did the smart thing. They just said, hey, we've gotten to the end of Excalibur Volume 1, and we're going to call it a day. So they never got to this.
There was Excalibur Volume 2, and Excalibur Volume 3, and New Excalibur. And
so much Excalibur. Chris Claremont
did multiple of those.
Yep, yep, it's true.
And Ben Robb did the other.
Yeah, yeah. So this is Chris Claremont and Michael Ryan. We're going to first talk about the first three issues of New Excalibur. And I don't think I really answered your question. I didn't hate it. I got to be honest. Like, if we're talking about this era of Claremont, it could be so much worse. It's not
New Exiles. That's for sure.
It's not that. It's not like whatever that was on, Genosha with, Tentacle Arm Callisto and all that stuff. Like
Excalibur Volume 3, yes.
Yeah.
As we all think of it.
Right. Like, this actually has characters, and Claremont seems to know how to actually have them interact. And there are some weird things, which we can get into. But overall, I didn't hate this. I went into it thinking I was going to really dislike it, and I didn't. So Dazzler is one of our stars here. She appears in her traditional outfit and, with the disco and the
disco Dazzler look,
blonde hair, the whole bit on page one. But we quickly realize that this is more of a disguise for her and that she is rocking a pixie cut with, hot pink hair now.
She is. It's weird. I remember 2005 pretty well. I don't know why she's dressed like a pink cosplayer. But she is.
I'm not going to worry about it. Unfortunately, she then is, for about half the issue, attacked by an evil alternate universe version of the O5 who kill her.
Yeah, so Dazzler's dead now.
Yeah. Really, like, starting off with a bang. And in the midst of this, we are getting kind of a reunion of the original Excalibur with Captain Britain. We have Psylocke here. We have
it's everyone but Megan, who has been lost in the recent Chris Claremont Uncanny X-Men House of M story, I think.
Sure.
Haven't read that one in almost 7 or 8 years. And frankly, the first time I read it, I did not have the appropriate context to understand it. Also, it has Chris Pachalo art at some of his most expressionistic.
Also here from the latter Excalibur is Mr. Pete Wisdom. And from Exiles, we have Juggernaut, who's a good guy now. And we have Nightcrawler's daughter from another world, Nocturne. So this is quite a large cast for the first couple of issues.
I like how you describe Juggernaut as from Exiles, a thing that we all remember Juggernaut's time on the Malibu Exiles, and that's what we most... I was thinking about the all-new Exiles earlier today. Stupid book.
Well, he's here. He's not rocking his outfit for most of this. He's just, he's just a big old guy, and you I don't know...
You're on the expansion at this time. Like, that, it makes sense that Jug's here. And you know what? I think Claremont's having fun writing him. Claremont's having fun writing Dazzler. Claremont always has fun writing Kitty Pryde and Rachel, who are definitely in love with each other in this comic. Like, it's like, Chris, you're pushing it. We all know, and no one's mad about it, but Chris.
Yeah, it's there. And she, Kitty rebuffs Pete's advances. We've got some more tension between Captain Britain and Courtney Ross, who is here.
Oh, and yes, because Chris Claremont's like, hey, remember how I replaced Courtney Ross with a Nazi lady?
Yeah.
Satire 9?
Yeah. And here we get the original back. Dazzler does not spend the rest of the issue dead. After some mild CPR, she immediately jumps back to life. And is needs to be taken to the nearby hospital. But this is when things go haywire, because we realize that there is an evil Professor X leading the evil O5, and they attack the hospital.
They do. And then everyone fights them.
Yeah.
They eventually stop these evil X-Men, figure out what's going on. They don't figure out at this time that it's the Shadow King, who's running everything, but
right, classic Claremont, but we're not quite there, even though the word shadow is used several times throughout these first three issues. So for, you know, any sharp-eyed readers, they probably maybe caught a hint of this. It's not that far of a stretch, especially given that I will say the one very strange thing that happens in this is not the Shadow King Evil 05. It is the fact that Sage just shows up and decides to become man in the chair for them.
Because Chris Claremont loves Sage.
Oh, yeah. That's apparent.
Chris Claremont, like, we talk about how much he loves Kitty Pryde, which is true. Chris Claremont loves Sage.
Oh, yeah.
One of his absolute faves. Like, there's a handful of characters that Claremont likes that were created after he, or came to prominence after he left. And yes, he brought Sage back and into prominence, but used her constantly. Bishop. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, Bishop's great.
Bishop's Australian. No, he's not. Chris, he's not.
Bishop's whatever we want him to be. Sure. That's what Bishop is. He loves those two. He actually writes a fun Pete Wisdom. Like,
he does.
He immediately gets what Pete Wisdom should be.
He does. Knows and, it. And this version of Pete isn't quite as nasty as the Ellis version. You know, he's
no, this is a Chris Claremont comic.
Right, right. He's a little sweeter, even if he's just a little bit more, you know, he's still an obstinate punk. There's also some just, you know, a little bit of Juggernaut sight gag humor at the start of the third issue where he's just trying to walk down the street and accidentally destroys like every car in sight and the cops are there and everybody's pissed off.
Chris gets it. That's the thing. When he gets it, he gets it.
Yeah.
I would say that the plot of this comic is kind of non-existent, and I get the high concept of what if the Shadow King had an evil group of X-Men, but it's also a bad plot.
There's not a lot happening here. It's an opportunity for Dazzler to have some agency, right? Because yep. She is like, hey, you know what? I think there's even a moment where Nocturne compliments her and she's like, yeah, I am awesome. But it's also
here's a secret. I don't care for Nocturne. I've got nothing for her.
That's okay. And there, for some reason, the evil Professor X Shadow King is really after Nocturne. But it's one of these weird things where, like, you'd think the first three issues of this would set up the team, but they kind of finish the first arc and they're like, yeah, I'm going home. Everybody's like, I don't want to do this. And this was fun, but see you later. And obviously that does not work out. They do end up teaming up for further adventures as part of this book. Zach, how do you feel about Mike Ryan's artwork here?
I feel nothing.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Like, it's very Marvel House artwork for me.
I think that's fair. I think Mike is clearly, you know, talented and, you know, is certainly not bad by any means, but there's nothing truly like stylistic or expressive that sets him apart from a lot of other artists. So unfortunately, especially some of the facial acting, it just doesn't really do a lot. Page layouts are just kind of normal house style. So, while I don't hate it, it's not singing to me. You know what I mean? If we're talking right. about Dazzler. So Dazzler dies, Dazzler comes back, and we get introduced to new Excalibur. Not a lot going on here. Should we try and rank it?
We should try and rank it. I mean, like, it's not bad.
No, it's certainly not bad. But it's, you know, we're
it's
not
also getting... good. Like,
yeah, yeah. It feels like Claremont is just kind of picking up where he left off with Exiles or picking up with where he left off with these Excalibur characters, and it's just okay, you know. So, you know, at 4:34 we have the final arc of his Nightcrawler with Bloody Bess and the Shadow King again. You think
Chris
this is
loves him a Shadow King?
Oh yeah. Better or worse than that?
That one is better. That has very charming Todd Knock art.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bloody Bess Nightcrawler relationship is fun.
Sure.
This is probably better, though, than when Chris Claremont came back for one issue of the X-Men's 50th anniversary in X-Men Gold.
Mm.
And that's different X-Men Gold. That's a 438.
Yeah, that's just the one shot. Looking around. I'm wondering if that's too high. I'm willing to
be wrong. Okay, you're saying, okay, you have X Campus highlighted. Are you sure you want to highlight X Campus?
Well, I'm saying it's better than X Campus.
It's probably better than X Campus.
Is it better than Captain Britain and the MI-13 at 497?
It's better than issues 1-4 of that. Not better than any of the other issues where that book actually becomes pretty darn good.
Okay. Like when
Pete Wisdom fought Dracula on the moon.
Amazing sentence.
It's a good sentence. I mean, it's just, that's just a accurate depiction of the story. Okay, no. Here's the limit. It's not better than 472 X-Men The Last Stand Collections Edition DVD movie with comic book.
Oh, that is true. That is true.
Got Zorn in it. That's got Stan Lee, quote, explaining Zorn.
It's amazing. No. Is this better than the canon arc of X-Men Volume 2 and 480?
Yes.
Okay.
But not from an artistic standpoint. The Kubert's kill it on that one. I would not put this above X-Men Evolution number 9, House Party, a comic that I had as a child, so I read a lot.
All right, so this can be our new 480?
Yes. Right. You know what? I think that's exactly the right spot, because this is about on the same level as the X-Men versus the Avengers 1-4.
Yep, I would agree.
Which is right above that. So perfect. We did a good.
First three issues of New Excalibur, and now we are going to talk about the sixth and seventh issue of New Excalibur, because Dazzler...
Because we're skipping the Lionheart stuff, because who cares about Lionheart?
but Dazzler is still trying to figure out why she didn't die in the first issue of this comic book, and in doing so, like, dies again?
More than one time!
Yeah, so six involves, this is happening after M-Day, and this issue six involves a character named Colin Hardy, who has been the leader of something called, the Scarlet Knights, a group of a family of superheroes who were depowered while they were flying people to safety, and all of them pretty much died because they fell to their deaths from a great height, except for this guy.
Now, Adam, you may be asking yourself, well, are the Scarlet Knights just like some Marvel UK thing that I don't know about because I'm an American?
I don't know. I mean, the Scarlet Knights that I'm most...
Claremont just made them up just for this.
That's what I figured. I did not think that he was a big Rutgers fan or anything like that. So, you know, what this guy decides to do for some reason, which I do not understand, is become a terrorist and blow up a train station?
Look, man, I don't know. Excalibur has to get involved. The new Excalibur. Which is just all the characters who were in that first story but weren't on the original Excalibur, with the exception of Captain Britain.
Yeah, and they're basically doing kind of rescue operations here, you know. But at the same time that this giant event has happened, and they're trying to rescue people, Sage is also trying to do a prison transport of the evil Professor X Shadow King character.
How's that working out for her?
It's not going to be good. Let me tell you, because, you know, they think that he's knocked out. He's not. He's mind controlling people. He's bringing all kinds of wacky stuff is happening here. You know, first of all, we've got the Shadow King stuff happening, but then we also have some other villains which are attacking the prison transport that then turn out to be a in disguise Black Tom, which is a wild swing.
It's weird. I also, because Juggernaut's on his team now, I 100% see why Chris Claremont, having read the Chuck Austin run, is like, oh geez, okay, well, we're gonna have to fix this one. We gotta do something. We're not leaving Black Tom Cassidy and Juggernaut's relationship like that. Not while I still draw breath. We're not doing that. if they're going to be broken up, fine, but we're going to give them some pathos.
Yes. To the point where Juggernaut actually has a vision of Sammy from the Austin arc.
We haven't talked about it on the show, that arc. We all know about the Squid Boy, the Chuck Austin Squid Boy that Juggernaut like adopts, kind of,
right,
like mentors. Anyway, he gets brutally murdered by Black Tom when Black Tom is in full crazy plant man form in front of Juggernaut. Juggernaut does not take that well.
No.
Fair enough. Threatens to kill Tom, sees him again. And Tom and Juggernaut, in probably the best written part of this entire issue, have like a couple of page heart to heart where Black Tom is just saying, I'm broken. I need help. That wasn't me. You know, that wasn't me, Kane. You know, like I'm not a good guy, but I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't just like gleefully murder a child. Something's going on and I'm not in control. And I need help, and I need you to forgive me. And Juggernaut, for his parts, essentially like, I mean, I'm not going to forgive you for murdering that kid. He was my favorite kid. And it's sad, and also a pretty good scene.
It is. I think what's difficult about the scene is that in the midst of it, Black Tom is holding a woman hostage. He is also previously in this arc killed Dazzler. Who then...
But he wouldn't brutalize a child. That's the difference.
Sure. Dazzler spends all of 3 pages dead before bouncing back. Wild. Absolutely crazy. Black Tom also is, you know, extremely, you know, violent towards other members of this team. And... You know,
again, he needs some help.
He needs some help. So
Black Tom needs to work on himself for a little while and then get really into nature for a little bit.
Yes. But it is good character development, especially for Kane Marco, who easily in his earlier incarnation probably would have just smushed Black Tom into a stain on the wall. And even in the midst of having a flashback of this murdered kid, is saying, hey, I'm going to be empathetic. I'm going to express some compassion and see what I can do for my friend who's clearly having a hard time. Now, does he deserve that? I don't know, but it's also hard because it's Claremont reacting to Chuck Austin.
It is, but also Claremont is reacting with grace and mercy in having Kane learn that. Yes. It's not about being fair or what Black Tom Cassidy deserves for truly terrifically horrible fish-based crimes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he made sushi out of that child.
Really, really awful. Now...
He's fictional. It's fine. It was 20-plus years ago.
Now, having not read the rest of New Excalibur, really, I think I've flipped through it. Do they ever get to the bottom of why Dazzler just keeps bouncing back to life? Is this explained?
That's a great question. No.
No.
So here's what happens.
Amazing.
And you actually see the start of it in issue 7 because there is a like additional credit for Chris Yost in this one.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's doing dialogue.
Yes. So Chris Claremont had a stroke about this time.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, he's better now. Now, sure. Like, you'll see him walk around with a cane, but he's also just old, like an active old guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, Claremont is off the book for almost a year. Frank Thierry, Yost, and a few others fill in for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back in what is a pretty good set of issues that he wrote specifically about him having the stroke.
Oh, interesting.
Like he has a character have a stroke and work through that. And some of that's working through your own stuff on the page, but it is worth like it's New Excalibur 16 and 17. It's worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, he just comes back and he says, okay, well, we only have so much left on this book. I want to do this stroke story because it's important to me. Props to you, Chris. And he says, okay, so what else do we need? Oh, we got to solve all of that Shadow King stuff.
Okay.
So then he spends the rest of the book doing the Shadow King stuff. And then it turns into like the Sword of the Braddocks and all this New Excalibur, New Exiles, Exiles crossover stuff. So he just never gets around to figuring it out.
Amazing.
Claremont would do that. Like, that's a very Claremont thing to like drop something and forget.
Yeah.
To ever resolve it.
Yeah, it's just funny.
And no one wants to resolve it at this point.
No, I guess not. You know, and obviously she just recently died before Fall of X and stayed dead. She was
fine.
She wasn't. Well, she's on the dead X-Men, so she did die.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. If you love Dazzler, we got two Dazzlers out of Fall of X. There was the part of her over there and the part of her over there.
Yeah.
Because Nimrod. Jesus. Nimrod flew down and then he split her and then her body split into two specifically.
God. All right.
That page is funny. I don't care who you are. I have a lot of feelings about Fall of X and the Hellfire Gala. The Russell Dodderman flip page from here's the thing to all the X-Men are now dead. That's a funny page turn.
It sure was a choice. Is this better or worse than the first three issues of New Excalibur?
I'm not saying that that moment should have been funny. I'm just saying that if you're making the decision to make that a laugh page, you did a great job.
Woof. All right, better or worse than 1-3?
I think this is better than 1-3.
I agree. I think it's got a little more character work going on here. The stuff with Juggernaut's pretty solid, but I still don't think we're that much better here. Like, I don't think this is better than Skinning of Souls at 475.
Okay. It's not better than X-Babies because it doesn't have a baby maggot in it.
Is it better than Uncanny 144 with Man-Thing?
I was looking at pictures of Man-Thing earlier today.
Just that's in your spare time in a
yes, that's not a dark joke. Room. I was on Google. Like, I need like a 2-minute like brain refresh for myself after a work thing, and I just Googled pictures of Man-Thing.
I love
like,
this.
What's for a you. Good? I want to find a good picture of Man-Thing. That's 100% true, folks.
Not on a work computer, I hope. You weren't Googling.
Oh, absolutely on a work computer.
Googling Man-Thing on a...
But I was Googling Man-Thing constantly. And yes, I would have to explain it to HR, but then I was like, you could also look at all my other search history, and I would just say, I hear you. I understand your concern. You don't... It's not what it looks like, and I have the receipts to tell you why.
Yes, actually, would you like to look at this collection of Man-Thing drawings that I have compiled? Here's my folder of Man-Things.
Do you see this $200 Mondo Man-Thing figurine that I found? It looks great. Yeah. I would not pay money for it.
But it's still pretty cool, right?
Yeah, right here. Google search, Man-Thing.
Yeah. Just,
I pulled it up. I didn't even think about it.
Isn't that thing $200 though? It's crazy. Oh,
it's like $250. Have you That's seen nuts. It?
I have. Yeah.
It looks dope as all get out. Though I don't particularly like how hunched Man-Thing is in that. I'm not saying Man-Thing shouldn't be hunched, but he's a little too hunched, though. Some of that may just be the mechanical construction that you have to do to make the action figure stand up good.
That's possible. You didn't answer my question, though. Is this better than that issue of Uncanny?
No, it's not, because it doesn't have Man-Thing in it.
All right, is it better than X-Men versus the Avengers?
Yes.
All right. So this will be our new...
The stroke, and this story still got finished, which is more than you can say about the X-Men versus the Avengers.
That is true. This is going to be our new 478 New Excalibur 6 and 7. And Zach, that concludes three different times that Dazzler died and came back. We did it.
And they aren't going to explain it.
No.
Here's the thing.
Never.
If there was a time to explain it, it would have happened by now. Now no one cares.
No.
Except for weirdos who keep asking people about it. Like, I think Steve Fox does bring it up as like a line of dialogue in Dead X-Men.
And yes. I do think that came up. Like, yeah.
I mean, fine. Weird reference, but okay. I mean, listen, they haven't made a Dazzler comic as good as Exterminators, and I doubt they're going to. Mm. That's the big problem that they're faced with any Dazzler comic from now on, is that you have to be better than her rollerblading in booty shorts that say Praxis on them.
That's a high bar to cross.
It's a super high bar. Yeah. Oh, man, I loved that series. That series is going to do well on this list.
Well, somebody's just got to request it. So why don't we thank our patron request again?
It'll be great. Oh, yeah. Thanks for the shenanigans. If you want to be like shenanigans, go to Patreon. We've got people are, I'm gonna tell you folks, you have been requesting weirder stuff.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because we have, I just got a request earlier today, Adam, and it's a weird one. It's a weird one. I'll tell you about it later, but it's weird and timely. So
great.
We'll talk about all of the things that our patrons do, but in the future, because like I said before the show, I am a sleepy right now.
Adam, that's okay.
What do you want to tell people about?
I do want to tell people that I guest co-hosted on the most recent Our Son Pete podcast, which is our CXF's editor-in-chief Dan Grote has a Patreon bonus podcast if you support ComicsXF, which I highly recommend that everybody does. But Our Son Pete is Dan's quest to do a podcast about every single issue Pete Wisdom has ever been in. I've been on the show. This is the second time I've been on the show. I was not nearly as nice as I was the first time. So it was a lot of fun, and we hope you tune in. Folks can always follow me on Twitter at Arthur Stacey, Adam Reck on Blue Sky and Instagram. And Zach, what are we doing next week?
Oh, we're going to a concert, Adam, because we're old. We are not going. We're going to hope that it is not not standing room only.
Well, I've got my tickets. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we're going to concerts. We're going to talk about concerts. It'll be fun for me, a guy who likes concerts, but has not been to a concert in an entire calendar year.
That's fair. You know, it's harder when you're an adult.
I had a kid this last year. I've been busy. It's been a whole thing. But until then, folks, this has been Battle of the Atom. We hope you survived the experience. Get it! This isn't for the listeners, Adam. I'm just doing finger guns.